Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Wednesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS is the number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. We'll talk some SEC football, Alabama football with Mike Johnson coming up at 7:20 p.m. Eastern, 4:20 p.m. Pacific. And then we'll do a little first and goal featuring the Denver Broncos today. And a man that has won two Super Bowls with the Denver Broncos and did make a all-pro team, Alfred Williams, Big Al, will be stopping by at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, 5:20 p.m. Pacific. But first up, producing the extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
Hot Take Hickey.
Hickey, do you actually know what today is? I know it's tough to keep track of everything, but there is a national day today regarding food, and I was not privy of this information until I got a text asking to come on a radio show on one of our affiliates, 560 WQAM, with Mark Hochman, Channing Crowder, and Alejandro Solana to help them out in this department. Do you have any idea what food item national day it is today?
I don't. I'll take one guess here because it was brought up at Nick Saban's press conference today. He was asked about it, so maybe this is pertinent. Cake. Is it National Cake Day?
Ooh, I like National Cake Day. I don't know when National Cake Day is. And we'll get to Nick Saban's crazy opinion that, what did he say, carrot cake was the best cake and the preeminent cake? What a joke that is. You know, I'm not against carrot cake, but it being the best cake, that is just an outlandish statement. But no, it is not National Cake Day. Today is National Hot Dog Day. And I wonder if it is actually National Hot Dog Day, because I always thought that was right around July 4th in the hot dog eating contest. And then when you Google it, it lists like 3 or 4 days in July. But I have seen other people today, once it was brought to my attention, say that today is National Hot Dog Day. So I don't know if that is actually true or not, but I did go on a radio show today, Hochman and Crowder on 560 WQAM, and because New York City has a bunch of hot dogs, right, the New York City Water Dogs, they wanted me to go get a hot dog, and I may have lied to them when I said that it was a New York City water dog. I went to the local diner, but I told them I got it right off a street cart vendor. I didn't want them to think less of me, but I went right across the street to a diner, ordered a hot dog to go, had a large black iced coffee as well, and I sat down to do this radio segment in my apartment, and for some reason, my microphone wasn't working, but my camera was on, so I had to do one of those awkward things, Hickey, when you get on Zoom and you hold the cell phone up, and I ate a hot dog over the span of a 20-minute radio segment today on 560 WQAM. So that's what I did this afternoon. Don't worry. I went to the gym. I got some physical activity, took some care of some things going on with my landlord and all that because there's a bunch of construction going on outside my building. They want me to re-up on a lease, and I'm trying to negotiate things like that. But today, as I got ready for the show, a lot of my prep work had to do with eating a hot dog and then making a bunch of really juvenile jokes.
Did you wash the hot dog down with iced coffee?
No. That was out of order. So I ordered a large black iced coffee, and then I got a hot dog, and it was actually a pretty good hot dog. I was surprised how big the hot dog was, and it was on a very good bun as well. So I was going on there at like 2:25 p.m. Eastern. So I didn't want to be late. I always get paranoid when I'm doing hits or something like that, or if it, I like to be on time. So I didn't want to be late. So I called down to the diner and ordered the coffee and the hot dog at like 2 o'clock. Got there at 2:05, drank the iced coffee, and then about 15 minutes later, ate the hot dog. And if people are asking, I put ketchup and mustard on the hot dog because I didn't want to offend anybody. Because I know if you just do ketchup, then people freak out. Oh, you got to have mustard. If you just do mustard, people freak out. And you say, oh, well, like, how do you not put ketchup on the hot dog? So I made sure I double dipped on the hot dog with ketchup and mustard. And it was very tasty. It was a good hot dog and had a good chat with those guys. And I thought it was funny that I was the guy that they thought of, oh, we need someone to eat a hot dog or go get a hot dog and eat it on the show because I guess it's National Hot Dog Day. And somehow, some way, they thought, okay, we'll bring on Zach Gelb. So that was the way that my Wednesday afternoon got started before I schlepped over here to our New York City studios.
I'd agree with them, by the way. Anytime I hear Zach Gelb, I immediately think hot dog, wiener. That's the first thing that pops in my brain.
That was a little bit weird the way that you just said that.
Well, there's a bunch of nicknames. Frankfurter, and you know, we can just go down and down the list.
Some say you're an L7 weenie, if we're being transparent here.
I would disagree. But stuff those people in a locker.
Well, let me ask you this, because Hochman started getting into this conversation. He has a Mount Rushmore of hot dogs, and he had the mini hot dog wrapped in a pretzel on it, but he didn't have a pig in a blanket. I think the pig in the blanket is my favorite type of hot dog. I know that could be controversial, right? It's not like your traditional ballpark dog, things like that, and that would probably be the answer. But I love the pig in the blanket as my favorite hot dog, if I'm being serious with you.
Are there four different types of hot dog you can even make a list for?
He had a whole list. I can't tell you that I could recite each and every one, and I'll try to find it real quickly, but my Twitter mentions are just absolutely absurd the last few days. Oh, here they go. Let me go to his Twitter. Here is the Mount Rushmore of hot dogs, according to Mark Hochman. The Annie Ann's mini pretzel hot dog, the cheddar dog at Michael's in Highland Park, Illinois, any hot dog eaten at a ballpark while watching a baseball game, and then the old dollar hot dogs at some place that I can't pronounce on Wednesday nights.
Okay, so it's like a little bit, it's not like different ways to prepare the hot dog. Yeah. It's just more different places and different, okay.
When you go to a ballpark, do you always get a hot dog? Do you always
never
have to
get
go get
dog.
A glizzy? You don't get a glizzy.
Never.
You're not a glizzy gobbler.
No.
So what do you do when you go to a ballpark?
Burger guy.
Ugh, a burger at a ballpark?
Chicken fingers kind of guy.
I'm on board with the chicken fingers. Chicken fingers and then some Nathan fries are very good, I think.
There's a steak sandwich at Citi Field for
the
Mets that I'll go
look
get.
At Hickey being bougie. I like this. Getting the filet mignon cheesesteak sandwich at Citi Field. Look at Hickey.
So,
last week, vacationing in Montauk for an entire week, getting all bougie. And then when he goes to Citi Field, he gets the $22 filet mignon cheesesteak.
Well, I will say, I went to the game on Saturday. My dinner was a giant pretzel. So I cheaped out.
You know what? Sometimes you just got to play it up. You got to play it up for the audience.
I'm honest. I am. I will not hide or try to put up this persona of, you know, uppity nature and Mr. Rich over here when I don't live up to it. So I will own my, I don't have a mistake, but I will own who I am.
So you won't be like me on Hochman and Crowder today when I was making. There is a hot dog stand a block from my apartment, but it was also a little bit rainy earlier today in the afternoon. So I wasn't going over there to wait in line for the hot dog at the Dirty Water Dog stand. I just wanted to call in to the diner. But I told him I got it from the Dirty Water Dog stand.
Wasn't committed to the bit. Hopefully they're not listening, so we don't, you know, just have all of the last few hours of radio undone because they were duped.
Oh, let's be real.
By where you got the dog from.
Let's be real. When I go on, and I've been a frequent guest on that station, it is very entertaining radio. I have never heard the two of those guys laugh more than they laughed in the 20 minutes of radio that I delivered to them today.
So you were eating the dog during the interview?
Yeah.
And they were asking you, I guess, questions about what, dogs?
Asking me about Deebo Samuel. They were asking me about Austin Eckler. They were asking me about how I like to eat my hot dog. Like, what do you like to put in the hot dog? And then a bunch of other sports stuff as well. You know, good guy radio talk, if you know what I'm saying.
Just men talking sports, eating wieners.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Hochman comes from that Dan Lebatard kind of lineage. So he used to work with Lebatard for all those years. So it's more of a laid-back kind of show, and you got to get the show. And they like me because I've known Channing for years because he used to work with Sid Rosenberg, and I know Sid very well. But I get their show, and that's another thing. Like, when I go on another radio show, when I go on Mac and Bone on WFNZ, when I go on Hochman and Crowder, I try to listen to a little bit before I go on so I kind of get the vibe of the show. And then you get in all the inside jokes and become friends with people, and then you get on and you're just busting balls and eating hot dogs there. So that's the way
maybe
that it
goes. Maybe if Debo listened to any part of the Zach Gelb show before he came on Monday, maybe he would have not hung up the phone. Maybe he would have understood the show.
I don't think there was anything he needed to understand. Here's what a lot of people have misunderstood about the Deebo Samuel interview. It's because you only hear the 2 minutes that gets pumped out on social media. If you go back and listen to the 5-6 minutes, outside of Deebo laughing at the one joke that I made to him about how impressive it was him running at the treadmill like 19 miles per hour, the guy just didn't want to answer anything. The guy wasn't interested. And sometimes you get guys that get on the air and they agree to do an interview and they're just not interested in doing the interview. So I could have asked Deebo Samuel anything and it would have been a crappy interview, if we're being honest, in terms of him delivering. It was actually better that he hung up the phone, because then at least he gave us something, because his answer stunk. And I was pretty much done with that. So at least you get some reaction from Deebo. If I'm just being transparent, you get something from Deebo where he was just so annoyed, and it was kind of laughable that he was annoyed. That's still one of those things. And they said this to me today when I was on the show. And Channing is an ex-football player. And he said this the other week, that it was a football, you were talking to a football player about football, about things about football that he said. So I really, I'm going to steal a line from Philly. I get the 40 Winers fans just getting all upset and they're going to go defend their guy. But anyone that's actually in the media, like people that aren't just paid to be sycophants for ex-athletes or to basically just genuflect anything the 49ers say, if you know how to do radio, and if you know how to cover things in the media, if you think I did anything wrong, you're just a moron. And that's the best way and the most polite way that I could say it. So I'm kind of done talking about the whole Deebo Samuel thing. And I find it funny, all like the random messages that I still get in the aftermath of that. Like, if you missed that a week ago, don't come back like a week later and be like, oh, what the heck are you doing? I'm not going to engage in conversation with you on this stuff. Anyway, this is Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I want to play something back that we had last night from a conversation with former Georgia quarterback and college football analyst Hudson Mason. So we all know Georgia is the best team on paper, or the team in college football right now that everyone is chasing heading into this season. Until someone knocks off Georgia, it's their national championship to lose, when even though they've had a lot of changing pieces the last 2 years, they won back-to-back national titles, and Kirby Smart is still going strong at Georgia with the Bulldogs. So when we were previewing the SEC yesterday, I did bring up to Hudson Mason how this year it feels different for LSU, where a year ago everyone's clowning Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly last year then gets to the SEC championship game before losing to Georgia. Heading into this year, LSU has arguably the best offensive and defensive player in the SEC. And then you look at Alabama. There's a lot of unknown with Alabama because they lost Bryce Young. They lost Will Anderson. They missed the college football playoff last year. They still have the great Nick Saban. But we don't even know who's going to be lining up under center for the Crimson Tide come week one. So here is Hudson Mason talking about how he views LSU as a better team than Alabama right now.
There's a ton of hype, and I think rightfully so. I think they're going to be the pick from the media to win the West, and they're going to be my pick. They got the best offensive player in the conference, and Jaden Daniels at quarterback. They got the best defensive player in the conference, and Harold Perkins, maybe the best defensive player in the country at the end of the year. They got one of the best receivers in the country. So, and I thought it was interesting. Let's see, Monday, it was LSU's day, and at SEC Media Days, and you know, Brian Kelly said that they are close to cutting the gap between their roster and Georgia's roster. He did not say Alabama. He said Georgia. And I think that caught a lot of people by surprise, because I think there's a lot of people that are wondering, especially with some of the question marks regarding Alabama coming in this year at quarterback, is LSU tracking down Alabama?
So here's what I'll say to this. If you tell me that the end of the college football season, Alabama will be in the college football playoff and they'll be in the national championship game and they win the national championship, I wouldn't be shocked, because Nick Saban, we know what he's done for so many years with the 6 national championships at Alabama and then the 1 at LSU. But I'll give credit to Hickey, because Hickey, this must have been 2 months ago, and I remember that you said something along the lines of, you don't really, and I know that sometimes you're an SEC hater and sometimes you're a little bit overly critical of Alabama, so I kind of take most of what you say with a giant grain of salt. when it comes to Alabama. But I'll give you credit where you said when you looked at the Alabama roster, and this is why I say all the time, even though you're not always right, you were probably the most knowledgeable person on the network, producer or host, when it comes to talking college football, with just how much you watch it. Now, you say some zany things like Penn State's going to the college football playoff, or there's some years where, like last year, where every team you picked to get to the college football playoff, it was basically the Hickey Hex and you cast a spell on them. But you made this point about 2 months ago that a lot of people, in even a year for college football, that once you get past Georgia and you know the talent of Michigan, this is pretty open when we're getting to a chase of the four teams. And you go, a lot of people are still going to pick Alabama, but when you evaluate that roster, sure, Alabama's always going to be in it. We know, right, last year, even when they had a down year, they only had two losses. But you're not even that impressed with this Alabama roster, and it's underwhelming from Alabama rosters that we've seen in the past, especially, right, like last year, the wide receiver room took a hit. I know they still had Jahmyr Gibbs. I know they still have Bryce Young and Will Anderson. And you lose those three players, and right now there's a lot of uncertainty. For the first time in a while, where a lot of times when people question Alabama, it's a big fat joke. But now there's some questions around Alabama on if they could even make the college football playoff this year. I'll never put it past Nick Saban, but I don't think that this is just one of those things in the summer gearing up for the season about a month away where there's always one jackass that says, oh, Alabama's not going to make the college football playoff or something. I do think there is some merit to that this year, and I'll give you credit because you were the first one that really brought it up on the national airwaves and to my attention 2 months ago.
I can't say I know exactly each and every year going in how I remember predicting Alabama, looking at them, but I could probably say pretty confidently this is the first time since probably Saban won the title in 2009 where there's legitimate questions and there's a legitimate reason why you can look at another team in the SEC West going into the season as being the better team. It's rare. But that's where we are this year, I think.
So let's do this. We'll take a time out here on CBS Sports Radio. I wasn't expecting to lead the show talking about National Hot Dog Day, which it may or may not be. And if it isn't, then you could blame Mark Hochman and Channing Crowder on 560 WQAM. But I'm going to go through the five tiers of college football teams that are contending for one of those four spots in the college football playoff this upcoming year. I'll give you my list, and then we'll get Hickey's list as well. And we'll compare and contrast that. It is the Zach Gelb Show, off and running on a very busy Wednesday edition on CBS Sports Radio.
In America, there's always been the promise of a better future. The land of opportunity, hope. Since the UA's founding, we've overcome big challenges. Together, we've fought to secure our freedom to organize, our freedom to collectively bargain, our freedom to work at fair wages. In today's world, it's easy to be cynical about politics. But under this president, the UA has secured more victories than at any other time. President Biden's new laws to rebuild America are creating 114 million UA work hours.
Union workers are going to transform America.
It's about making things here in America again. It's about good jobs, and it's about damn time we're doing it.
Joe Biden has delivered on UA infrastructure. He's protected our pensions and our gold standard UA apprenticeships. That's why the UA is backing Joe Biden for president.
For our freedoms, for our members, for America. Joe Biden for president.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, so this is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We're going to give you our five tiers of college football teams entering this upcoming season. And we're just viewing the teams that are a contender to make the college football playoff. Hickey, I was surprised how generous I was here because when I started out this exercise, I did not think I would get into the teens because I'm very strict in terms of viewing someone as good and then viewing someone as great. And you also know, like when we talk about the NFL, like heading into the season, I think it was about a month ago, I said I only view there to be five or six teams that I actually believe can go out there and win a Super Bowl. Now, this is just to get into one of the four spots in the college football playoff. The last year will be four teams. And I had 13 teams from spread out through my five tiers. How many did you end up having?
I have 13 as well. I feel like I was a little generous today, maybe gave a few teams I shouldn't have the benefit of the doubt. But in contention doesn't mean I think they'll make it. Just in the conversation in November, I'll go 13.
I wonder if we have the same 13 teams.
Guess we're about to find out.
Okay, so tier one. How many teams do you have in tier one?
One.
So do I. You want to say it on three? Ready? One, two, three. Temple.
Penn State. All right, let's go.
So both of us obviously have Georgia, correct,
yes.
Mundo?
Georgia Bulldogs.
Okay, now tier two. How many teams do you have?
I have two.
So do I. I think we'll have the same two teams. Is one of those teams Michigan?
Yes.
And Michigan, all right, you have McCarthy back. You got Donovan Edwards back. You got Blake Corum coming on back. We saw after 2 years ago losing Ajabo and Hutchinson, the defense came back and was awesome last year. So they've been able to kind of rotate through new defensive players. And offensively, this is as good of an offense that they're going to have in the last 3 years when they've made this run, if you factor in this season as well. So Michigan is one of those teams in tier two. And the big question for Michigan is, can they take that next step where they've crushed Ohio State the last 2 years? They've won the Big Ten Championship the last 2 years. Can you get into a national championship game, though, and hoist the college football playoff trophy? And the other team I have is actually LSU, where I don't know if I would have been this optimistic on LSU a few weeks ago, and I probably would have put Bama in front of LSU. But when you go through the LSU roster, on paper, I think it's better than Alabama, and I'm buying into Brian Kelly, which I have ever since the hire, really, outside of the whole family stuff and the cringy recruiting videos. But I said at the end of last college football season, if I'm looking at the next 5 years or so of college football, the three coaches that I'll trust the most are Kirby Smart, Nick Saban, and Brian Kelly. So my tier two teams are Michigan and LSU. Do we have the same tier two teams?
We do not.
Ooh, okay. So you have Michigan as one of your tier two teams. Who's the other tier two team?
USC. Going with Caleb Williams. I'm going with Lincoln Riley. Look, the defense is bad.
Defense is bad.
But will it be any worse than last year? I'm going to say no.
Where they did not win a Pac-12 championship and blew two games against Utah.
I'm not making any excuses. I'm more pointing out facts. In that Pac-12 title game, Caleb Williams and USC was driving down the field. He gets hurt, pulls a hamstring, not the same afterwards. Is the game outcome different? Maybe not, because again, that USC defense could not stop a nosebleed, but that drastically changed the game and changed the momentum in the game going forward here, where it wasn't like, yes, USC defense is bad. They also literally knocked on the door of the college football playoff last year. I think their defense will be better this year.
Okay. I'll tell you this. I don't have USC in my tier three. As we advance to tier three. In my tier three, I have Bama and Ohio State. We know Bama has been the standard for a long time, and Georgia has now overtaken that. Ohio State, they were dominant in the Big Ten the last 2 years, have lost their way up against Michigan, but we know both of those teams have been there forever. They're starting to get questioned if they're losing ground, but if either of those teams end up winning the SEC or the Big Ten this year, it shouldn't shock anyone for 1 second. Just with what Saban has built at Alabama and with Ryan Day, he's only lost like six games as the coach. Just two of them happened to be to Michigan, which they never lost to Michigan. So that's why people are souring on Ryan Day. So my tier three, I only have two teams, and it's Alabama and Ohio State. How many tier three teams do you have?
I have six.
Wow. Okay.
Six tier three teams, which if you look at the math, we each have three teams in the top two tiers. So really, we're talking about who could compete right now for the fourth and final spot. I think it is wide open. So in no order, I do have from the Big Ten, Penn State and Ohio State. From the SEC,
you're putting Penn State on the same level as Ohio State when James Franklin has not been able to win a big game for the most part during his tenure. What is he, like 3-15 against the top 10? Okay.
I am. I have no trust in Kyle McCorder now for Ohio State, to say the least. So those two from the Big Ten.
So you have Ohio State and Penn State.
Ohio State and Penn State. LSU as well. I got Clemson in there and going out west to the Pac-12, UW, Washington, and Oregon.
Okay. So my tier four. No Utah there. You said Oregon, not Utah. Just to hear that right.
Washington and Oregon in tier three, no Utah.
See, you know what's funny? I was thinking about, do I put Oregon on this list? Because I was looking at tier four and I didn't. For tier four, I elected to go with Clemson, where the ACC is not strong. Dabo has to adjust. And now you have Cade Klubnik for a full season.
But then I also group Clemson as a team where I just look at them as they could get to the college football playoff, but I don't think they're going to go win a national championship this year. And that's why I elected to group Clemson in tier four with also the Pac-12 teams. And the three Pac-12 teams I selected, USC, Washington, and then Utah as well, because I think all three of those teams in the Pac-12, if they get in, you know, sure, can Caleb Williams go win a game in the college football playoff? Yes. But I don't expect those teams to get to a national championship game. I love Michael Penix. We'll see what that defense is going to be like with Washington. And Utah, assuming that if Cam Rising can come back healthy, Cam Rising is a very underrated and an outside dark horse kind of guy for the Heisman Trophy. But I put those three Pac-12 teams together with Clemson, where I think they could get to the college football playoff. But I don't think they're going to do much damage once they get into the final four teams for the CFP.
My tier four has two teams, Alabama and Utah.
Wait. I just realized this. You put Penn State and who else in front of Alabama?
Penn State, Ohio State, LSU, Clemson, Washington, Oregon.
I know that people are souring in Alabama. I don't know if you could sour in Alabama that much. So, and then tier five. How many did you have for tier five? I wasn't
two.
Keeping track of the math. Okay. For tier five, I have Penn State. I have Florida State, I have Texas, and then I have Notre Dame. And the way I will say this, why I put them in tier five, all four of those teams that I just mentioned have a lot of talent. All four of those teams can go on to get to the college football playoff. They could be really good, but I got to see it. We've been hearing about James Franklin trying to win a big game for a while. Florida State, Mike Norvell did a good job last year. Does it carry over into this season in a conference that isn't that strong? Texas, they're supposed to be back this year. But how many years have we been saying that? And then when you look at Notre Dame, Marcus Freeman survived a slow start, finished strong, and you have Sam Hartman coming over to be their quarterback from Wake Forest. So all four of those teams, big brands, big names, big talent pools, but we got to see if they can put it together.
I probably could have eliminated Tier 5, to be honest with you, but again, we'll play the game and be generous here. To your point of, hey, it could happen, Notre Dame, Florida State, Tier 5 for me.
So the one school that we disagreed on, I put Texas in Tier 5, and then you put Oregon, and you had Oregon in what, Tier 4?
Oregon in Tier 3.
Oh, Tier 3. Whew.
Texas is like the Cowboys. I will never believe in them ever again until they actually prove something.
But
no benefit of the doubt.
The Cowboys do win a lot of regular season games. We're going to get a good read on what Texas is going to be early on in the season when they play Alabama. That was a game that if Quinn, you want to talk about injuries. If Quinn Ewers doesn't get hurt last year, I think they win that game. I really do. And Texas opens up the season against Rice. Sark, if you can't beat Rice, I will drive you to the airport. I'm not even a Longhorn fan. But then you get your season really started up against Alabama. But if you survive that, you have Wyoming, Baylor, who I don't have a good read on. Kansas, I know people like Leipold. Venables, he's talking smack about everybody else. He better have a good year. You got Houston, BYU, Kansas State. You know, Klieman's done a good job. TCU, they're going to regress this year. How about Iowa State? Remember Matt Campbell's getting talked about for NFL jobs? And where I soured on Matt Campbell was the year they were supposed to win the Big 12. And he was like, at the end of the season, I never said that. Those weren't our expectations. He ran from that. And ever since, I've not been a big fan of his. And then they got Joey McGuire at Texas Tech. I know the Big 12 will kind of be like the Pac-12 where they'll beat up on one another. But in the Pac-12, I think the teams are stronger heading into this season. But if Texas gets through Alabama, you think the hype is big around Texas football, you will have a lot of people, Hickey, that will start to proclaim that the Longhorns, horn up, not horn down, are back, baby.
That B word is going to be thrown around obnoxiously.
And I'll tell you, the other thing that I'm really curious about with the Longhorns, and you never want to see someone get injured, but if Quinn Ewers gets injured again, we've now had two analysts that cover the Big 12 in Texas, Ari Temkin for Big 12 Radio, and then Fozzie Whitaker, who played for the Longhorns, both say that if Quinn Ewers either struggles or if he gets hurt, right now Malik Murphy is listed as number two on that depth chart. And I just want to see if Sark has the stones. It's one thing to put Arch Manning third in the depth chart right now, and we know what Malik Murphy can be. But I want to see if Sark really has the stones where if Quinn Ewers has to miss a few games or has to just miss one start because of an injury or you're thinking about making a change, if he stays true to that depth chart. Because you know how the Texas fan will quickly sour on someone, and you know what the hype will be if Ewer stinks out of the gate, or if he gets hurt, those fans are going to want to see Arch Manning. And the college football world and the football world is going to want to see Arch Manning, Hickey.
Yeah, he's in a no-win situation there. So his best scenario is Quinn Ewers plays well, and that's not a competition or a conversation, I should say, because you're right. That would be some stones move there to say, Arch, stay on the bench, buddy.
And watch Malik Murphy ball out. Watch him ball out, and then Arch Manning transfers at the end of this year.
In the transfer portal.
I would assume
Nick Saban maybe give him a call.
Hey, real quickly, so I did see that you put out a new shower no cap video the other day. You got ripped this morning, I heard, on the morning show here, on the DA show on CBS Sports Radio. Maybe I'll grab that audio and play it for you later. But they were ripping you left and right, and I actually kind of thought it was funny with what they were saying. But you put, what, a bar of soap in your hand, and you were comparing the running back position to a bar of soap, is that right?
That's right. Running backs are a bar of soap. Are they the sexiest position? No. But are they necessary? Yes.
Okay. If that's a take, fine. At least you used a prop. You finally listened there. Have you had any luck on getting any guests in the shower with you? You know, have some in-studio or in-shower guests with you?
Sent a lot of flyers out. Anyone want to in-studio, I guess really in-shower guest? So far, a lot of no answers and or no.
You should reach out to Texas.
So, why is that?
See if they'll give you Arch Manning.
In the shower?
I'm sure that guy would love to rip his shirt off and join you in the shower.
He's ripped.
You see how ripped he was?
He's shredded. Ripped. He's no Peyton and he's no Eli.
Yeah. No dad bods for Arch Manning.
No, that's for sure.
You know what? If I could be one college athlete right now, I think I'd want to be Arch Manning. You don't got to play this year, and you could just run around that campus and have a good time. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that want to accompany Arch Manning on that campus.
Well, hopefully he can keep his ID in check. Seen that? He lost his ID like 3 times.
A student ID.
I mean, that's
do you think on that
bad
campus,
key security.
Do you think
it's
on that
lead to
campus,
problems on the field?
He needs a student ID or anything? Everyone knows who he is.
How much do you think you could sell that for? You find an Arch Manning student ID on the ground?
Who cares?
I would try to sell that.
Why?
I think people
What's
would
the
buy
value?
It.
It's a student ID.
It's Arch Manning's.
Who cares?
I mean, you see people selling, you know, Russell Wilson's towel after he tossed it off after a loss. Yeah. People buy crazy obscure things. I bet you that would have a decent market.
Yeah, no.
So maybe you know. Maybe we'll go down to Texas, look on campus, try to find an ID, and maybe I'll retire off of that.
Jeez. Yeah, you won't retire off that. I think you
may
make...
Right. I'll keep it for 3 years. He's the number one pick. I'll start to sell it.
I guarantee you this. You make more here a week than what you would get for an Arch Manning ID card. I could guarantee you that. Off a one-time sale? That thing's not worth more than $100 right now. If that at all.
Gotta let it, you know, appreciate in value.
You make at least $100 a week here, right?
Gotta count the pennies. Yeah. Maybe. I hope so.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We will take a break. When we come on back, we'll talk about the Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? Some more drama with the drama Dallas choking Cowboys.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So Zach Martin of the Dallas Cowboys is scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent in 2025. So he has this year, and then I believe, yes, the year after that on his contract. Now, I read today from Adam Schefter that Cowboys 6-time All-Pro guard and team captain Zach Martin is considering not reporting to training camp due to his unhappiness with his contract and the team's lack of interest in restructuring it. Per sources, Martin believes that he is woefully underpaid relative to the market. He's scheduled to make about $7 million less this season than the NFL's top paid guards. So when you see something like this, Hickey, because it's the Cowboys, and then also because right now you're in this time period where players are getting ready to report for training camp, whenever you have a contract that's in the news, people always make it out to be a big deal. Like, for example, the Saquon Barkley stuff, the Josh Jacobs stuff as well. I know the running backs are a hot topic. I don't think it really makes much sense for Barkley nor Josh Jacobs to sit out. Like, I would say, okay, sure, right now, don't show up to training camp, but when week one gets there, report that week and go get you $10.1 million or whatever it is. For Zach Martin, though, who is under contract, so if he holds out and he doesn't report, then he's going to get fined, and it's not one of those hold-ins, and maybe it turns out to be from the terminology of it, and maybe that does change. But I think a lot of people today look at this report, and they're like, it's a big deal. I don't really think it's that big of a deal, because you have time to restructure the contract. Now, you could talk about why didn't this happen before, and I'm sure this isn't the first time that this is brought up. But does anyone think that Zach Martin, who doesn't really need training camp, who doesn't need to be there for the offseason workouts and all that stuff, does anyone think that he's not going to show up for week one for the Dallas Cowboys? Because if he doesn't, then it's a different conversation. For right now, I think it's something we try to make a big deal, but in reality, the large scheme of things, it's not really that big of a deal.
I think you hit on it. The new CBA basically makes it impossible to hold out or hold in. I would be surprised. Like, yes, he's going to be there week one without a doubt.
And I'm sure that they'll find a way to restructure. It's like, here's the thing with the Cowboys, too. Find me an offseason, or find me like right around this time each and every year where we don't talk about someone on the Cowboys being disgruntled with their contract and something playing on out contractually, where Jerry Jones always finds a way, even if it takes longer than expected, to get the deal done. And remember the Dak contract? Oh, this is one of my favorite videos of all time, where he's talking to the team website. I don't know. I don't remember if you were with me yet. You may have been, because the Dak contract thing took so long to get done. That was a multiple-year conversation. But he did an interview with the team website, and he was talking about how some people have a bachelor's degree, and then you get your master's degree. And he was making this point that if he was in a forest and got his hand cut to stitch back up the hand, it's not necessarily what you learned in your master's degree, which is more current. It's more so what you got from your bachelor's degree. And we were all sitting there saying, is Jerry okay? Like, what the bleep is this dude talking about? But this goes on every year with the Cowboys. But usually, Hickey, they find a way to get the job done. And when you have a player like Zach Martin, who is getting older but is still extremely valuable to that team, I would be surprised, whether it's incentives or you bump up the salary a little bit, if they don't find a way to get this deal done.
Especially with how important this year is, right, with so much pressure, as always, riding on the Cowboys and Jerry Jones being very open about how badly he wants to win one more Super Bowl. And this feels like this would be the biggest one of his career, even though he has a few already. I would be surprised, like I said, if there's anything that leads to one of the best players in the NFL not being on the field for week number one.
And not only that, I think the way that we look at the Cowboys and the way that we talked about the Cowboys the last few years, something needs to change in this conversation. Because you talked about the importance of Zach. For a long time, if we said, who has the best offensive line in the NFL? Immediately, without hesitation, people would be like, oh, it's the Dallas Cowboys. The last few seasons, that offensive line has not only changed, but it's regressed as well. If you look at their offensive line, it's no longer an offensive line that people fear. It's no longer an offensive line that people consider good. Like, you have a good player, like two good players on that offensive line, but it's not as if this offensive line is that great as we once thought out to be. And you kind of look, I don't want to say this new era of Dallas Cowboys, but Zeke now no longer in the picture unless they find a way to get him to come back. And at that point, what do you really expect out of Ezekiel Elliott? He's a number two running back on that team if he does come back. But that offensive line has some problems, and I think that may get highlighted a little bit more this year. And we'll see what turns out with Zach Martin. Now, you get rid of Zach Martin, that offensive line goes from average to just below average, and then it's going to be putrid. But you look at that team this year, we all talk about Dak. We all talk about, right, Tony Pollard and his emergence, CeeDee Lamb. They bring in Brandon Cooks. You got Michael Gallup still there. The defense has played really well. That offensive line this year, just because we're programmed to say the Cowboys' offensive line is great, it has not been great for the last year or two in the NFL. And I think this will be a year where they could put up enough wins in the regular season, so maybe it does cover it. But I do think some people are going to start to realize, wow, this offensive line isn't what it used to be.
I still think they're pretty good, but what adds to the anxiety of winning sooner is that they're older. So, like, that's also an issue, too. Like, I still think they can play at a high level, but for how much longer, the window is rapidly closing, where it was not only a good offensive line, but still a young offensive line where you can have it for the future. Now we're looking at an aging offensive line that, again, Now those guys you got a few years ago are starting to creep up to late 20s, early 30s.
Teron Smith's 32. And then you have Zach Martin, who's 32 as well.
So two of your better guys, again, are up there. So that only just ups, you know, the angst, if you will, to get it done sooner rather than later, because you're going to have to turn that entire offensive line over relatively soon.
And I know that we always fall into the trap about talking about the Cowboys because they are the drama Dallas choking Cowboys. I feel, though, as if we shouldn't take the bait anymore because we all know how this season's going to end. They'll have a good regular season, you know, a challenge for the division. I don't think they're going to win the division. I think it's going to be Philly. They'll have double-digit wins, and then come playoff time, they'll come up short. Where I have confidence that their defense will play well. But offensively, I don't believe in the Cowboys' offense. I don't think the Cowboys are going to win a championship with this offense right now because I don't think the quarterback is great. We got to see how long it takes Tony Pollard coming off that nasty injury. You know, CeeDee Lamb is really good. Brandon Cooks is solid. We all know that. But that offensive line and the tight end room, it's not a lot to write home about. And it's not as if you have this great quarterback. You have a good quarterback, not a great quarterback. So last year they improved because they won a playoff game. And I know you could laugh at that, but they did, especially with the opponent. It's up against Tampa Bay. It was 8-9. But I have a tough time even in a weak NFC seeing the Cowboys get to an NFC championship game. And just for starters, if they don't find a way to make the championship game for the first time since the 1995 season, then this season is a disaster. I don't care what you do in the regular season. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Let's draft some Super Bowl contenders. We'll do that next.